మేధా మే ఇంద్రో దదాతు మేధా దేవీ సరస్వతీ మేధా మే అశ్వినావుభౌ ఆధత్తాం పుష్కరస్రజాః ఆప్యాయంతు మమాంగాని వాక్ ప్రాణశ్చక్షుశ్రోత్రమధోబల ఇంద్రియాణి చ సర్వాణి సర్వం బ్రహ్మోపనిషదం మాహం బ్రహ్మ నిరాకుర్యాం మా బ్రహ్మ నిరాకరోత్ అనిరాకరణమస్తు అనిరాకరణమస్తు తదాత్మని నిరదేయ ఉపనిషత్సు ధర్మాః తే మయి సంతు ఓం శాంతి శాంతి శాంతి. హార్టీ ఫ్రెటర్నల్ గ్రీటింగ్స్ అండ్ గుడ్ విషెస్ టు ఆల్ ది బ్రదర్స్ అండ్ ది సిస్టర్స్ అండ్ ది చిల్డ్రన్ వీ హ్యావ్ హియర్. ఫస్ట్ ఆఫ్ ఆల్ ఐ వన్స్ అగైన్ వెల్కమ్ యూ ఆల్ హార్టిలీ టు దిస్ ల్యాండ్ ఆఫ్ ఏన్షియంట్ విజ్డమ్ విచ్ ఈజ్ హిడెన్ ఇన్ దిస్ ల్యాండ్ నాట్ సో వెరీ ఎక్స్ప్లిసిట్. India, as we see outside, is different from the India that is in the occult dimension. So, since you know that thanks to the teachings of masters of hierarchy, you all gather here every year to relate to the wisdom. It also encourages for the Indian group to relate to you and to see with what devotion and dedication you are continuing to learn wisdom. Wisdom is always hidden. It's not available in markets. It's not available in malls. It's not available in publicity. Wisdom is something that has to be searched for out of hunger for wisdom. Unless there is enough hunger for wisdom, you cannot find wisdom. And since we are all very hungry for wisdom, this program is continuing over decades. And as long as the hunger is there, there has to be a feed coming from the nature. So that's how from JHS there is the teacher-student relationship by which wisdom is not only informed but is also transmitted for transformation. Wisdom does two jobs. One is there is the peripheral part of information and there is the deeper and more profound form of transformation which happens when you relate to the teacher or to the wisdom, because the wisdom and the teacher are but one and the same. So once again we feel joyful to receive members from various parts of the globe. Within the country I keep moving, but you all come once in a year here, and we dwell in wisdom for about 8 to 9 days, then conclude it with Guru Pujas. And as I said earlier, this is the 32nd year. There is what is called prehistoric times, meaning before 32, during the times of Master E.K. Also, it in the latter part, it just commenced. Our Sister Lucy and Banwa, Berna, these are all persons who were coming at that time. to learn astrology, to learn homeopathy, and to learn wisdom. From 82 it started, 83 it happened, later master departed. For 2 years it happened. In the house, side by house, in our house, some classes, Radha Madhav. And in the house, besides this house, was also taken by us. There also we accommodated people and did it. From those time to these times, it's about 40 years. And the activity has really been very helpful. Since we find it is beneficial for our own well-being, the beings that we are, more than the personalities, they drive us to relate to wisdom. The predominance of the being over the personality leads beings towards wisdom, because that's where the ultimate comfort is. There's no doubt comfort in a variety of things, but the ultimate comfort is in wisdom. And therefore we gather and we dwell in wisdom. And insofar as the wisdom is beyond the sectarian dimension, beyond the religious dimension, beyond the dimensions of tradition and superstition, such wisdom is a unfettered, unconditioned wisdom. That is what the masters stand for. And we are relating to such a wisdom, which is neither Eastern nor Western, but global, solar, and even cosmic. That's the beauty of wisdom. Coming back to the theme, I will introduce the story relating to the theme today. And there are about 12 hymns relating to the Ashwins given in Mahabharata, which I try to present to you. It is one capsule. Ashwins are the fiery breaths of the cosmos. If I have to put it in the language of Madame Blavatsky, Ashwins are the fiery breaths. One inhalation, one exhalation. In its detail is the whole universe and its duration, and that is preceded over by Ashwins, according to Veda. They are not untrue beings, meaning they are there at every dimension, but they are not visible unless you orient to them and orient to their presence in the smallest form and in its macro form. Ashwins preside over the atom. Ashwins also preside over the entire creation. That's the beauty of them. And they are unseen. They are there, but they are unseen. So they are said to be Nasatyas. Nasatya means, translated by again Madame Blavatsky, as not untrue beings. Not untrue. Meaning, unless you take an occult dimension, you can't find their presence. So they are there, but they are not there. All occult wisdom is like that. It is for the occult student. When he orients, it is there. When he does not orient, it is not there. When you are in the peripheral, only peripheral things appear. And peripheral things are all apparent and transitory. The things that are behind the peripheral things is what is to be seen lifting up the veil. That's where Madame Blavatsky inaugurated a new cycle with the concept of unveiling the veil. Isis unveiled. To lift the curtain and see. That's how it is. So these Nasatyas, their full form is presented in Rigveda in the form of Suparna Suktams. They are 52 in number. They are also called Asya Vamasya Suktam. Master E.K. was an adept with respect to those suktams. He is an adept with respect to those suktams. His father was really a master from whom he learned it. Master E.K.'s father was the one who was considered to be an authority of Vedas during those times. He taught it to his son, and then Master E.K. gave it out in Telugu, 52 hymns representing the 52 weeks of the year. That's how the hymns are conceived. Vedavyasa, he is the master of the for the Kali age, as I said. But for him, there would have been no light on the planet in Kali Yuga. Anything said anywhere on the globe, it is the basis is found in the writings of Vedavyasa. He is embodiment of Lord Krishna. There were three Krishnas during Krishna's time. One Krishna is Lord Krishna, whom we are familiar with by his stories, by his deeds, he is a complete being in manifestation like that. He is being praised everywhere. Another Krishna is Vedavyasa. His name is also Krishna. He lived in a island, that is the White Island. And he is said to be the Krishna of the White Black Island, Krishna of the island, Krishna Dvaipayana. And then there is another Krishna during those times, that is whom we call the Lady of the Five Sons of Light. Her name is also Krishna. Into one Krishna has come down into form in these three ways. So Veda Vyasa is one of the three, and he deliberated upon the Veda, classified into four Vedas. He deliberated upon Puranas and made them into 18 Puranas. It is he who gave out Mahabharata, and it is in Mahabharata you have Bhagavad Gita as a part. And it is he who gave out Bhagavad Gita. And it is he who gave out the aphorisms on Brahman, the beyond. He is considered to be the grand sire of wisdom amidst all the seers in Dwapara Yuga. So he thought fit these 52 hymns contained in Veda with respect to the Ashwins. He gave them in a worshipful form in Mahabharata in 12 hymns, in 12 slokas. And that is really very beneficial. 12 suktams daily, they are very simple suktams to utter. We will utter together every day from tomorrow. So simple, but so profound. It contains a lot of wisdom, and it is arranged in a manner where it is in a worshipful form, meaning you are relating to Ashwins in a mode of worship, which in turn would bring the blessings from the worship. And Ashwins are nothing but the male-female god of the universe. If you say male-female, it is already the Ashwins, the twins. So the twin aspect of the whole creation can be seen as Ashwins. We'll get into details tomorrow. So these 12 hymns are what we are going to describe. The 12 slokas we are going to describe in this session here. It so happened I went to Bangalore for the Maykal 2018 a week days before, I went to Bangalore. Having gone there, it came to me, why did I come so early for the Maykal? Why did I come so early for the Maykal? Making this question into the space around, I sat in the first prayer, Then came the response, teach the Ashwins. Teach the Ashwins. So I taught the Ashwins there for a week days and thereafter conducted the Mekal. It was done in Telugu. And it was so deeply appreciated everywhere. In fact, the group was inspired. They already transcribed it. And last week they gave me a book which I have to edit and give them back so that they publish. When so much is felt about the teaching, I felt it is unfair if I don't do that for our groups and the rest. That's why I thought that I do it in English here. And we get into the sublime wisdom. That's how the theme of Ashwins came to be this year. The story in Mahabharata about Ashwins, I will narrate. There was a teacher by name Dhaumya. This teacher was well versed with the Vedas and he was a wealthy person living in a family system. He had no need to work for money. So he thought he would teach wisdom to those who are inclined. And he was teaching wisdom in a disciplined way. We all know about the Grand Master Pythagoras, how disciplined he was with his students. Only if a student is really disciplined, the wisdom was opened for them, not for all. So also, this teacher, he's a seer, is called Dhaumya. He had a name during those days, a title, that he's an iron-teethed one. You know, iron is so strong, you know. If you have iron teeth, you can crush anything. If you have iron teeth, you can crush anything. In fact, in some of the movies you see a tall person with iron teeth, impossible to fight with. So this man has gained the title of iron teeth in the meaning, the iron teeth teacher he is. Meaning, he will put the students to such a discipline that he is completely smashed. Meaning his personality is totally put to discipline in such a manner that he cannot but transform. That's the kind of a teacher he was. And knowing this, people were interested to join his school. See, you would like to join an institute where there is a very high discipline so that when you come out of that school, you are already something, isn't it? Just like, had you been through the Pythagorean school and become a member of Pythagorean group, you are already respected by the society for the wisdom you hold and for the acts that you do. So like that, he had an excellent name. So many were trying to join his school, but there is the preliminary test. Unless the students stand for the test, he would not admit them for the esoteric dimension. He was only tested in terms of his ability to fall in tune with the discipline. So there was like that, he used to have students who were willing for discipline, who were willing for seventh ray discipline, sixth ray devotion, these two, and then the first ray will. These were tested. Does he have enough will? Is he willing for discipline? Has he the urge to realize? The devotion, the basic understanding of devotion is you cannot be relaxing unless you are associated with the divine in you. దట్ ఈస్ హౌ డివోషన్ ఇస్ సీన్. డివోషన్ ఈజ్ ఏ కాన్స్టెంట్ అండ్ కన్సిస్టెంట్ అర్జ్ టు అసోసియేట్ విత్ ది మాస్టర్ కాన్షియస్నెస్ ఇన్ వన్ సెల్ఫ్. దట్ ఈస్ ది డివోషన్. దట్స్ ది ఫండమెంటల్. విత్ ద డివోషన్ ఇఫ్ యూ పికప్ ది రిథమ్ విచ్ ఇస్ సెవెంత్ రే వి సే టుడే, ఇన్ ది ఓల్డెన్ డేస్ ఇట్ ఈస్ సెట్ టు బి శిక్షణ ట్రైనింగ్. సో దట్ సెవెంత్ రే రిథమ్ అండ్ విత్ దిస్ ఎక్స్ట్రా ఆర్డినరీ డివోషన్ ఇఫ్ అండ్ దెన్ ది విల్ టు రీచ్ అన్లెస్ దీస్ త్రీ ఆర్ అడిక్వేట్లీ ప్రెజెంట్ ఇన్ ఎ స్టూడెంట్ ఆర్ నాట్ వాజ్ డీప్లీ టెస్టెడ్ బై ది మాస్టర్ ఫర్ అబౌట్ 30 months. 30 months because it is the duration of Saturn to transit one sun sign. In 2.5 years, Saturn transits a sun sign. So for a when a student comes, until 30 months he is tested. 2.5 years. In the case of Pythagoras, it was 3 years. And those who succeed in the test, he used to admit them into his school. And everything about the student is taken care of by the teacher. That is how the Gurukulas were in the past. Meaning your food, your shelter, your clothing, all your requirements from that day, it is the responsibility of the master. And he would feed you according to him, not according to you. He would feed you according to him, not according to you. And he would dress you also according to him, not according to you. He would entrust works to you according to him, but not according to him. What kind of work enables a student to transform is what he could see and then accordingly entrust work. He used to entrust different works to different students and they are all full of Saturnian effort. The Saturn dimension relating to the student is put to test as a fundamental training. So there was one student whose name was Upamanyu. Upamanyu was the name. He succeeded in the preliminary training related that was imposed by the teacher, and therefore he was admitted for the esoteric training. In fact, Upamanyu consequently became a great seer. But initially he went through his own Saturnian training. So when Upamanyu was given entry into the esoteric school, the master suggested to the students that he should collect the cows of the village nearby. He should collect the cows of the residents of the village which is nearby, and then take the cows to the forest, feed them, bring them back and entrust every cow to the respective house and come back. This was the task given to him. It's a kind of a social dimension, a service dimension. And when the teacher Dhaumya says that the student is entrusted to a student, the villagers can feel very confident. A student coming from this teacher to do some service at your house, responsibility for the acts of the student. So he was entrusted with the task of gathering the cows of the village, taking them to the nearby forest, ensure that they graze, and then they come back. So one day, when he collected the cows, took them to the forest, and then grazed them, then entrusted all the cows to the respective households, and returned by around the sunset hour. Then the teacher asked the student, "What did you eat today? What did you eat today?" The teacher did not pack breakfast and gave it to him. Just like we do, in case if anybody is going by train or flight, during the morning we pack the breakfast, we pack the lunch, if possible, breakfast and lunch. Like that we ensure the fear of insecurity relating to food. But this teacher, he didn't even think of giving anything to the student. But when he returned home, he asked the student, "What did you eat today? Were you not hungry?" The student answered, "When I felt hungry, I milked some cows, took the milk, and that's how I satisfied my hunger." The teacher said, "That is called thieving. It is thieving. How can you drink milk from the cows which are not yours? They are not your cows. The cows belong to the villagers. And without their permission, how can you drink milk? And you can't. If you drink away their milk, what confidence and trust they would have with you? So please don't do that tomorrow." Sir. So next day, he again went out and did the work and came back. The teacher again asked, "What did you eat today?" Then he said, "I took the foam coming out of the milk and took the milk generating from the foam generated out of the milk, I took it." How could he do that? Unless there is milk coming, how could the foam come? He said, when the calves were taking the milk, I took the foam. Calves are allowed, they have the right to drink from their mother. So he said, even that is thieving, the master said. Even that is thieving, don't try to thieve anything. Because the cows belong to the villagers. Next day again the boy, Upamanyu, he went with the cows and then he was very hungry. Was very hungry, naturally. So what happened? He cannot take anything from the cow or cow milk or cow milk foam. So he thought, "Let me eat some leaves from the forest." Eating the leaves from the forest, he did not know which leaf to eat, which leaf not to eat. He was plucking out leaves and trying to eat. It so happened that when he was plucking the leaf of a white calotropis, the milk of white calotropis spilled and fell into his eyes and he lost his eyes. That's what I was saying, that this vision aid program which we conducted just before seminar is about this sight. So this, he lost his sight. But he is duty bound to make sure that the cows reach their places. In spite of losing sight, he makes sure that all cows are restored to the respective houses. And in darkness, when he was walking towards the ashram, he fell into a well. He fell into a well where there was no water. There was no water. So the teacher and the other students, they were looking for him. He did not turn up. So then the teacher said, "Let's go to the forest and find him during the dark hours. Let us go and let us find where this Upamanyu is, because he has not come home." So he went to the village and the villager said, he restored all the cows to the houses. So it's only from the house to the ashram on the way, somewhere he must have been lost. So he was in a good search of the way and he found the boy in the well. He found the boy in the well. Then he asked the boy what happened. The student Upamanyu, he explained what happened. Then the teacher said, you should not have eaten leaves without knowing what is edible leaf, what is not edible leaf. You are unable to overcome your hunger, and now that you are blind, what is it that you can do? He said, I am only interested in fulfilling the command given to me by my teacher. In doing that, I fell into this well, having lost my sight. It does not matter if I have lost my sight, insofar as my teacher is favorable to me. If my teacher is favorable to me, that is good enough. I don't mind having lost my sight. I don't mind having fallen into the well. See that boy? The teacher was pleased. What should we do normally? We should arrange to lift him up from the well, isn't it? And arrange for some treatment for his eyes. But this teacher is totally different. He taught to this student Upamanyu the 12 hymns of Aswins. He narrated the 12 hymns of Aswins to this boy Upamanyu and said, you keep chanting them, everything will set into order. And along with the rest of the students, he came back to the ashram. And then this boy, in the utter darkness and in the deep down in the well, having listened to the hymns, he went on relating to them by reciting them. In how many days he got his sight back, we don't have a detail. But he gained his sight. You know what happened? He gained his sight. And then he gained the wisdom and vision. The energy in him, it has pulled him up out of the well. The energy that he received through these hymns, by virtue of the grace of the Master, not only he gained his sight, but he gained wisdom, and he gained vision, and he could levitate from out of the well. That's how the story is. He levitates. That's what happened. On account of the thread of consciousness becoming stronger and stronger by recitation, and slowly the golden thread moved up and up and up and pulled the body of the student Upamanyu out of the well. He came out, he stood in a resplendent color, and he came to his teacher and touched his feet and said, this is what has happened, and the Aswins want to bless me, but I said, I cannot accept your blessings without my teacher's permission. See, the teacher was thrilled. See, there are so many students that have been there along with him, but this one, having fallen into a calamity, see, he fell into such a deep crisis, but his will and his obedience to his teacher and the discipline that he followed in reciting these hymns and the devotion that he had let him out. That's why for those who wish to gain all these dimensions, firstly, the dimensions relating to the favor of the teacher. Secondly, the dimension relating to gaining sight. Thirdly, the dimension relating to gaining wisdom, and then the vision. All came to him through this hymn. So this is what Vedavyasa speaks in Mahabharata. And he recommends for all beings, for their well-being in all dimensions, they may recite these 12 hymns in a regular manner. So that's how the story relating to the Ashwin worship hymns is presented in Mahabharata. Just to show you, to give you the pretext relating to the hymns that we are going to speak upon. That means these hymns help us when we relate to these aspects through the hymns. By gaining the related comprehension, our awareness is lifted up in such a manner that we cannot really imagine. In fact, when one of the members of the World Cricket Trust, when he was losing his sight, and he was relating to the Master so well, he was in the town of Vijayawada. So he came once to the Master and said, "Master, I am a lecturer in the college. I need to teach and I need to relate to students. I am very fast losing my vision." His name is Surya Appaya. "So what should I do?" Then the Master, he said, "Recite Ashwini Suttams, and for the benefit of the group, let me also give a brief commentary on these Ashwini Suttams." That's how he gave it out. And he also gave Lord Maitreya's picture to that man. "Keep looking into the two eyes of the Lord Maitreya and chant the hymn, you would no more lose your sight further. There will be no further loss and you will be able to conduct yourself in a manner disturbed until you retire from the until your retirement age," and it happened with him. So that's how Ashwini Suttams, as a brief commentary, came to us into the World Teacher Trust, and we keep using it. Normally when it is new, people get excited and they relate. Thereafter slowly it gets into background when something new comes up. So this is how these hymns, even today, are recommended for people who would like to restore their vision, number one, and gain wisdom, number two, and then gain self-realization, number three. And that's all about it, isn't it? The entire discipleship is to gain wisdom and then the vision relating to the self. So that's how the basic understanding relating to this is given in Mahabharata. There is also one more story. I narrated that story also. There are so many stories about Ashwins, but this story is also relevant. Once it so happened, a king went into forest with his army and also his family. He went. Normally kings go to forest to contain the animals to the forest, not to kill them, but to contain them to the forest. They don't get into the villages and cause disturbance. So when the villagers and the civilians, when they complain about animals frequently getting into the villages and towns, the king has a duty to ensure that all animals are restored to their jurisdiction, to their area of residence, that is the forest. So that's why from time to time king goes with his kinsmen and also with his family to be there in the forest, not to kill but to restore animals and make sure that they are in the forest. So he went with his daughter, who was considered to be the most beautiful lady of the kingdom. She was known to be the most beautiful lady and very well versed in knowledge and exceedingly well behaved. She also went with the father to the forest to move around and see the forest. So when the king was busy with hunting of the disciplining the animals, the lady was moving around with her friends in the forest. So when she came up to a point where she saw a huge heap of mud, just like the ant hills that are built in the forest. The ants, they build in a conical form with holes everywhere to come out. The ant hills. So there was a huge ant hill of this size. There would be many like that in forest. Even in India, if you go around, you find them. Normally, when the ants build these houses, snakes come and stay in it. And so the snakes make them as their residence. So she saw a particular ant hill where from two holes very unimaginably brilliant light was coming out. There were two holes from which a lot of light was coming out. She was interested to know what could be there in that ant hill that so much light is coming out. Just like in the night when we go by automobile, the two headlights, they throw out light now. Beams of light were coming out of it. So she saw and she was curious to know. So she took a stack that has fallen on the ground from the tree and pierced it into the hole to see what kind of light it is. When she pierced, blood started coming out of her. She was firstly surprised, secondly frightened. Frightened because she has hurt a being, that blood is coming out when she pierces the stack into the hole. Then not only that, she again tried with the other one. So that also started bleeding. She was perplexed, she was frightened. As this event has happened, in the entire area, the air was arrested. There is arrest of air. When there is arrest of air, breathing becomes very difficult. Breathing became difficult, prana and apana became difficult. All the holes relating to the human being, the nine orifices, they started closing down. So when in the forest this is happening, the king was looking for his daughter. He came and he saw his daughter, and the daughter narrated all that I have narrated to you. This must be the reason for this crisis in the area. And see this, the blood flow that came out of these two holes. Earlier these two holes were transmitting radiant light. Then the king knew that it must be a seer. It must be a seer in penance. And seers, when they are in penance, when they go beyond the body consciousness, they continue to be in contemplation while in the meanwhile, the ants busily they build the mud hill around their body. It is very common. For that kind of penance is not possible in Kali Yuga, but it was there till recently, even in Dwapara. So the king understood there must be a great seer sitting inside, and we must have caused harm to him. So he got the mud to be removed, and then he saw a seer sitting in a sitting posture with his eyes closed and the eyes bleeding. So he touched the feet of the seer and requested him to be favorable to him, to his family, and to the people who are suffering on account of the consequence of this act. The seer came back with the touch of the king off his feet. He came back into his body and he understood the situation. And he said, he looked at the king. The king said, "I will do any favor that you ask for." I will do any favor that you ask for. Kindly release this crisis that has happened on account of the ignorant act of my child. Then the seer was so old, it's over decades and decades he has been in contemplation. So he looked at the king, he looked at the daughter of the king. So he told the king, if you wish that everything should be redressed and you should be blessed, there is only one way. Offer your daughter in marriage to me. Offer your daughter in marriage to me. By this act, you get the release, number one. For the ignorant act that your daughter did, she also gets completely, the act of repentance and rectitude gets completed by her serving me. By her serving me, when I am in penance, she will have to take care of me. And for that, you may marry your daughter, you may give your daughter in marriage to me. To the king, it was so disheartening, disappointing, dispiriting, because the daughter, only daughter, no son, number one. A daughter with extraordinary talent, number two. A daughter who is exceedingly beautiful, number three. And above all, a daughter to the father. That is a very special relation. So he was hesitating. The seer said, it's up to you, I am not insisting. I am only showing, according to law, this is the solution. The daughter said to the king, Dad, what the seer says, I am in complete agreement. I am in complete agreement. It's all happened because of me. And he gave a solution, not only to you, to me, but also to our people. So let me take it and work it out. So then and there the marriage was done in forest without any reception. Without any kingly, kingly marriages are done in such pomp. But then and there the marriage was done, the daughter was entrusted to the seer, and the king left. And the lady, she is such an aligned being, such an aligned being. She went on serving this man, and he was not a civilian as such, because he's a mendicant. He is in penance. We don't know when he comes out of it. When he comes out of it, he should be given the bath, the drink, and the food, and he should be covered for the seasons. Almost taking care of him without any regard towards herself. And being a princely, being a princess, she did it for 1 year without any iota of complaint. The seer was at seeing how best this lady can stay in that commitment, and he showed extraordinary commitment. Extraordinary. Then after 1 year, the seer spoke to the lady, what would you like as a favor for having served me for 1 year? You have become my life partner. I didn't even speak to you. I didn't even relate to you. You have been serving me day and night for 1 year without a complaint entertained even in the mind. So ask me anything, I will do it for you. I am pleased with you. I am pleased with you. Then you know, for a lady, the dearest thing is the parental house. For a lady, to go to the parents' house once in a way is the dearest thing. So he said, let us go and meet my father. Let me see my parents. You can also visit them. We go together, visit the parents, and then later whatever you decide, we go ahead and do it. He said, fair enough. And he told the lady, before we go to your father, let me get fresh in the river nearby, and you too join me. Let us go for a river bath together. So they went in to the river, and she told the lady, let us dip ourselves 3 times into the river together and come out. 3 times. So as they dipped 3 times and came out, by the 3rd time they dipped and came out, this seer became the most handsome man. So very radiant, so completely radiant, so very attractive. It was unimaginable. And he said, this is my inner form, with which I can build my outer form. The outer form is, we do not normally care. But now that you served, regardless my form, regardless my idiosyncrasies, regardless all my idiotic behavior with you, you continue to serve. So therefore I must look to you in a manner which is not even imaginable to anyone. So he was almost like an angel shining in a body of resplendent colors and extremely beautiful. So the lady was, the princess, she knew that this man is great, otherwise how can the eyes can be so sad? She said, while this could be a slight surprise to me, but it is not a complete surprise. I know that you are like that. I know that you are a being of great light, and that light was coming through your eyes, and that is what I got interested in. Unless you carry that light within, how can it be that such light comes out? So I am very glad that you are like this. My father will be very, very happy to see you now. So they went to the kingdom, and at the entry door, she informed that she came with her husband. The king was all joy, and he invited the two into the royal court. And she saw her daughter with a young man who is very extraordinarily handsome. And the king was disappointed. That's how the story is in Mahabharata. The king was disappointed. That seer was so great. He was so pious, so powerful. I gave you in marriage to him. You ditched him and married this man and came here. Like that he went on talking. Then the seer, he smiled. And then showed his original form, which the king saw, and again showed this form. And said, I am pleased with your daughter. That's why I have changed my form for agreeability. I have come with this form so that you also would feel great that your son-in-law is just no beggar. That your son-in-law is just no beggar. He is something not only in the inner world, but also in the outer world. For that reason, I agreed to come with your daughter and meet you. Be happy. Then the king asked, what is the secret of your regaining such a body? Then the king said, the seer says, Ashwins. It is contemplation upon Ashwins that enabled me to realize. And Ashwins are always available to me whenever I invoke them. Ashwins respond to me whenever I invoke them. That was the fruit of the penance that I did in the forest. Therefore, there is nothing that the Ashwins cannot do. This is how the seer's name is Chyavana. And the lady's name is Sukanya. Chyavana and Sukanya's story is one of the important episodes mentioned in Mahabharata. So that is to show the benevolence that the Ashwins show. And then the first story is also about how quickly one is transformed as one relates to Ashwins. And from tomorrow we relate to Ashwins in their various dimensions. ఇట్స్ ఎ కైండ్ ఆఫ్ నోయింగ్ హౌ మెనీ ఇన్ హౌ మెనీ డైమెన్షన్స్ అశ్విన్స్ ఆర్ డైలీ ప్రెసెంట్ టు అస్. డైలీ ది అశ్విన్స్ ఆర్ ప్రెసెంట్ టు అస్ అండ్ వీ డూ నాట్ రియలీ రిలేట్ టు. So this hymn enables us, these 12 shlokas enable us to relate to them, and when regularly recollected, you continue to, you don't have to by heart the hymns. But the dimension presented in so far as you remember and daily make one invocation. You know, we do invoke Ashwins daily, not knowing what it is. When we say Shamno Mitra Sham Varunaha, it's already Ashwins. Mitra and Varuna are their cosmic manifestation, while they are supra cosmic. Mitra and Varuna. But do we know it? And how great they are, we don't know. So that's why when we know this and then do it, we relate well, we orient well, by which we receive the kind of fulfillment which according to Vedas, no other intelligence can bestow. So such is the topic that came to us, and we deliberate upon it from tomorrow morning, starting with the first hymn. Thank you one and all. It is now 20 minutes past 8. Tomorrow the class, you have the timetable. We go according to the timetable. Namaskar.